the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. When it comes to crime and poor quality of life issues in the black community, who is responsible? We often blame the man or systemic racism or the others who don't look like us. But do we, black people, have the courage to look at problems in our communities and say, maybe there is something we should be doing to fix our own problems? Well, tonight, in part two of our look at crime and other issues in our community, we are having a Dear Black People conversation. My guests are Dr. Terry Adams, Associate Dean of the Howard University Graduate School, and Sam Ford, D.C. Bureau Chief for WJLA-TV7. Lines are open if you have a comment or question about what's happening in our community, what's wrong with it, and what should we be doing to correct it. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Sam, Dr. Adams, thank you both for joining the program again. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
So, Dr. Adams, can you hear me? Oh, there you go. Okay.
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Sam, let me start with this story that you did today. I saw the story. It was about problems at Kenilworth Parkside Public Housing Community. You had black people who live there, black people who work there, who are concerned about violence perpetrated in that community by, I assume, other black people. That's what we're talking about tonight. What's your take on what's going on right now, Sam?
Well, I don't know if it's what's going on now, but it's been going on, you know, as long as I've been sort of paying attention for decades. But there are peaks, you know, there's spikes. And I think we're kind of in a spike period right now. Kenilworth Public Housing has been, you know, one of the older properties here in the city. I don't know if some of your viewers would remember Kimmy Gray. She was certainly a national advocate for public housing. She's a late Kimmy Gray. Or I remember a Republican congressman named Jack Kemp. He was close friends with Kimmy Gray, interested in Kenilworth, interested in improving lives in public housing. And so that was sort of one of the symbols, Kenilworth, there. Generally, what happens, I cover the city all the time. Many times, you go to public housing, you talk about problems, people don't want anything to do with you. They really don't want to talk about it. And that's not unusual, you know. But in this case, they called me yesterday. And they said, would you please come out here and show how we are living. Let us tell our story. So I thought, you know, that's different. And I went out there. And these people are terrified. I mean, scary is the word that they use. But there's some sort of dispute, as I understand it, perhaps involving rap videos where young men in one complex and the young men that are around Kenilworth do rap videos to insult each other. And as a result, they come and shoot up the neighborhood. And what these people are saying is that, you know, it's not just young men that are involved in this stuff that are shooting each other. They're shooting up neighborhoods. Anybody can get hit by these bullets. And there was one lady, and she'd been living there since 1965. She said, I'm too old to be hitting the floor.
Yeah.
And apparently this is a constant thing. I mean, it's not constant, but it's happening all the time. You don't know. And the other thing that was quite disturbing, basically, if you fit a certain demographic in that neighborhood, i.e. black, male, of a certain age, you're liable to just get shot just because you live there. I mean, they don't know you. They don't have anything to do with you. You can just get shot, and that is a big concern. As one man we talked about, you have to have your head on a swivel as you walk the streets of that neighborhood along Quarrel Street and Anacostia Avenue.
Well, Dr. Adams, this doesn't necessarily just have to happen in public housing communities. It's happening everywhere. It's happening in the city. It's happening out in the, you know, happening out in, you know, the suburbs. We've seen these flash mob robberies at high-end stores, when we see the videos, these are young black people. Why is this, what is causing, our young black people to do this? What is causing our adult black men to call another black woman out of her name when she decides she doesn't want to give him, her phone number? Who is doing, the carjackings? At some point, I think we have to look in the mirror and say that we need to be responsible for our own chaos and foolishness.
Well, I think it's complicated. And I think if you look at crime trends, you'll see that, our crime rates have been increasing since before 2020. And the pandemic just kind of exacerbated things across the nation. And that in terms of what fuels black-on-black crime, I don't think it's necessarily hatred for ourselves, even though that has something to do with it. People tend to attack or commit crimes in places where they have access to. And I think that the conversation needs to consider how the social and economic conditions are fueling some of the changes that we're seeing. Because if you look at the homicide trends, we're actually going back to the trends that we saw prior to 2011. So there's something that's going on that's fueling these kinds of behaviors. And it might be some of what we're seeing on, some of the discussions or some of the arguments that are going on in the sphere of social media. But it's actually real world things that are happening that are influencing how people are viewing themselves. Their sense of opportunities and place in the world, I think that is influencing some of the behaviors that we're seeing.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are having a real Dear Black People conversation. What responsibility do we as black people have for the problems that are happening in our own community? Greg, give us a call from Maryland. What's on your mind?
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little annoyed right now. I'm mad at us, but go ahead. What's on your mind?
My comment is this. Are you here?
Yeah, I'm listening. Go right ahead.
Okay, yeah, my comment is this. We talk about how black lives matter. The problem I think we have is black respect matters also. We don't respect each other as black people anymore, as African Americans. That's my biggest concern about us as a race. We have to get back to respecting each other, views, comments, and opinions, and whatever people feel. Just respect each other, and things should take a turn, I hope. We got to respect each other. That's my comment.
Greg, thank you so much. 202-319.
One thing that you did say that was you talked about that today, you also had a situation where you had marshals to actually kill a man. They were trying to apprehend.
Right.
But in any event, I was talking to one of the police officials there, and we've talked quite a bit. I won't name him because I didn't ask him. But he said this to me. He said, basically, we have got to start focusing, and he's black, by the way. He said, we've got to start focusing and admitting some of this stuff. He said 86% of the people involved in this violence, particularly homicides, are black people, black males, he said, and another 6% are black females. And he said, but nobody wants to say that. I mean, everybody knows that, and I don't know if saying it would help. But that's a fact in D.C., I mean, I don't know about, certain areas, but certainly that's a fact here. And I think, you need to focus on that, definitely.
But how do we focus on this, Dr. Adams? You were talking, for example, about the homicide rate in 2011. And while I think that is a very valid point, it's not just about homicide, Dr. Adams. I'm talking about driving down the road and seeing a black driver in front of me, male or female, single person or family, throwing out their fast food trash on the road.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a crime. It's illegal to litter, but that's about quality of life.
Right.
Why do we do that? You know, God forbid that I do that and my mother see me do it my age. Okay.
I think we don't want to conflate things, though. And then I said, going back to the year 2011, I should have said even further back to the 1990s.
I understand your point, but go ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that how you're socialized depends on how you act in the world. So, you know, I grew up in Baltimore City. I grew up with, you know, people that taught me how to behave in a certain manner. But when I went in on the outside world, I thought you were supposed to put your trash on the ground. Until, of course, my mother or my grandmother, somebody saw me doing that, and they corrected me. So the people who are throwing trash out the window, they think that's okay because they've seen that behavior happening, and people tend to emulate other behaviors. So I think we, in order to move the needle to stop people from doing that, I think we need public service announcements. Really talking about proper behaviors. I think we need to put in our schools. I think kids need to be taught how to behave appropriately in public places. I know, you know, people make jokes about it, but I can't remember how long ago, but Monique talked about, you know, women wearing hair bonnets in public spaces. And they were, you know, she got a lot of backlash against that. But, you know, we need to talk about these kind of things, and but do it in a loving manner. So that people don't feel attacked, but they are educated. So there's a gap that's happening between what kids are being or young people are being fed or socialized in appropriate behaviors, I think is what you're talking about.
Yeah, and as I said, it's about crime. But it's but it's not just about crime. As I said, it's about quality of life. Allow me, Sam, to do the when I was a kid bit, but 9 times out of 10 when I was in school, elementary school, if there was a report to my parents about me acting up in school, 9 times out of 10 the report was accurate, number one. And number two, I never had to worry about either one of my parents going to a school and threatening my teacher. Because even if I was wrong, the adults in the room, i.e. my parents and the teachers, were on this, were still on the same page, because they were trying to make sure that I got the best education. And my parents, as educated people and educators, were making sure that, you know, that they and that teacher were on the same page. But I never saw any conflict. But now, Sam, we are hearing, I'm sure you've reported on it, we've had parents who are first ready to defend their child before the story is.
Well, that's true. I just wanted to go back to one other thing. We were talking about stories. I did one last week on 22nd Southeast in Washington. And this is an area that has had a number of homicides. In fact, we went out there because we heard that a 15-year-old tried to carjack a grandmother who was on her way for her chemo treatment. And so she did an interview with me off camera, but she did an interview basically saying she was on her way to have her chemo treatments. This kid came up and said, you know, he was going to take her car, and he acted like he had a gun. And she says, you're not taking my car today. She had a fight with this kid. She's 71 years old, and she screamed, and her grandson heard her, and the neighbors heard her, and they came, and the kid started running. Well, they caught him across the street. They whipped up on him, and quite frankly, and then called the police, and they took him away. He walked into that neighborhood to steal a car, and he went out by ambulance. But, you know, I put that on Facebook. A lot of people reacted to it because a lot of people are just tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you sit around Washington, you have to think, if you're going to go to your car, is some kid going to carjack you? Or it is something where I think people want to have more order. And in some ways, I guess more punishment for stuff like this. I mean, we sit around and we just continue to basically wring our hands and say, you know, what can we do? Well, I think we need to stop it. But people in that neighborhood, certainly I would think, made an impression. you know, don't come into our street carjacking our grandma.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that story as well. I thought it was strategic in the way that you wrote it, where you said people caught up with him and then he left in an ambulance, and it made me say, I wonder how that happened. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about crime and other quality of life issues in the Black community. Whose responsibilities are these issues? Let's go quickly to Trey, calling from D.C. Trey, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you? And it's Tree. I'm sorry.
Tree, okay, go right ahead.
No problem. I wanted to speak to what one of your guests said a few moments ago that kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, what we're seeing, it's going to require a multi-layered approach. It's going to require collective efforts of all of us. I personally don't think it's as simple as we need to implement harsher consequences. We need to be willing to, you know, wring a child up by the neck or whatever. If you look at some of the trends, at least that I'm seeing, a lot of the crimes, when you, you know, see that there's a seeming spike in crime, they're younger age people that are committing, you know, the carjackings, the robberies, and a lot of these things that we're seeing that are dominating the headlines presently.
Tree, hold on. I need to interrupt you. Don't lose your point. I've got to take a really quick break, but I want you to finish your point on the other side. We are talking about crime and quality of life issues in the Black community. This is a Dear Black People conversation. Who is responsible? We are looking in the mirror. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is part two of our look at crime and other quality of life issues in our community. We are having a Dear Black People conversation. My guests are Dr. Terry Adams, Associate Dean of the Howard University Graduate School, and Sam Ford, D.C. Bureau Chief for WJLA-TV7. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR. Or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. We were talking to Tree from D.C. before the break. Tree, go right ahead, please.
Sure, thank you.
Sure.
So what I was saying was there needs to be a multi-layered approach, because I think there are a lot of contributing factors to, you know, what we're seeing as far as this seeming spike in crime. And then also what I see is a, you know, younger age individuals that are seemingly committing these crimes. And while we were seeing trends prior to COVID, I definitely agree with your guest who said, you know, things have been further exacerbated as a result of COVID. When you look at the impact of, you know, and we're still navigating this pandemic, that's not at all to suggest that COVID is over, you know, kids having to go into a virtual posture, the impact, you know, on households losing, you know, family members, sometimes household lost parents even, to COVID, and the impact that has had on our youth, particularly in lower income environments where you have more of a tendency to see a lot of these criminal activities. When you consider for a lot of households during the period of time that kids were in virtual learning, school is their only structure. And so when they were less that, and you had, you know, the number of households that weren't equipped with internet or Wi-Fi, so they couldn't engage in virtual learning anyway, that's almost 3 years of no structure, no guidance, no nothing, not to mention the lack of engagement and interaction directly was contributed to, you know, their social development. So I had a conversation about this with a colleague recently. While you see these young people, they look older in terms of their maturity, they're still in, you know, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, or whatever grade they were in when the shutdown occurred. And then you have a lack of resources. You have households that are exhausted by this posture.
Okay, Tree, hold on. I hate to stop you, but here's my problem with what you're saying, okay? The world didn't just turn upside down because of COVID. And you know, this is a hard sell for me. So you were locked down during COVID, as, you know, it, you know, just like everybody else. And so now that means you're going to go carjack somebody.
No.
Hold on. Let me, because, you know, it's just like we have these two kids who are awaiting trial for shooting a Metro bus driver when he just bought a brand new car. He's putting gas in his car back in December, saved up for his favorite, you know, BMW 5 Series, proud as paint. Okay? But, you know, these suspects are from Upper Marlboro. They weren't from some ghetto. They had parents at home. So, black parents. So this is the thing that I'm saying about we need to look in the mirror about, you know, why these things are happening in our community, what parents are or are not doing, what adults are or, because it's not just kids, but what adults are or are not doing.
And I totally agree, which is why I said it has to be a multi-layered approach. I don't think there's just one single solution. Like, some people will say we need harsher consequences. Well, there are harsh consequences for criminal activity, but that doesn't necessarily seem to be the deterrent that we would prefer. And granted, there are two-parent households who are doing the work and da-da-da-da-da, but that still doesn't necessarily guarantee that, you know, they won't have someone in their household that will go out and commit a crime. I think there are a lot of things that we have to do collectively, and it requires a level of responsibility on all of our parts. It's not just one single solution.
Okay. Tree, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Adams, Tree just said it takes a village. Is the village broken? Do we need some Elmer's glue and some packing tape?
Well, I wholeheartedly agree with what she said. And I think that people have different kinds of responses to trauma and stress. So for those of us who were comfortable in our homes during the COVID pandemic, you know, we responded differently than people who were under tremendous stress, didn't know where the next meal was going to come from. You know, family members might have been laid off from work. There's like uncertainty that exists among people who live on the fringes of society. And then you amplify that with COVID. You know, people respond to that differently. So I think that we do need to be critical, but we also need to look at this with heart and try to figure out how do we fill in the gaps.
So how do we fill in the gaps? How do we, you know, how do we fix, how do we fix us?
I think we need more programs for kids. I know that sounds like, everybody or every liberal says that. But I do think providing kids with a vision of what their future could look like without crime, without engaging in bad behaviors, would allow them to disconnect from that kind of world. But if you're not given that opportunity, if it seems like all hope is lost, if it seems like, you know, the police can just come in and beat and kill and do whatever they want to in our neighborhoods and nothing happens, it just develops apathy. And so people, again, behave to apathy differently. Some turn inwardly and they harm themselves through various ways, and others, do things outwardly. And so I think in terms of what we do as a society, we need to continue to have these conversations, and we need to really think about what can we do to help our kids feel more whole?
Sam, I know you, I don't know how many children you have, but I know you raised at least one great daughter.
Well, I have actually a great son, too.
So there you go. And
who's home? Who's home from Atlanta this week? He's got a conference in D.C.
You know,
yeah, I'm very proud of my kids.
Exactly. Never met your son, met your daughter, and, you know, the work that, you know, that she has done, you know, out in Prince George's County, you know, a brilliant political operative, you know, the whole bit. So somebody did something right.
My late wife, she raised those kids. I mean, you know, I have to give her credit. You know, I mean, I was the provider, but I wasn't at every basketball game and whatever. She was at everything.
I think my point is, that, so here's the point. I was having this conversation with one of my colleagues. You know, my sister has a son, a nephew. He is just brilliant all the time, straight A student, whole bit. But my sister's got a great job. Her husband's got a great job. Kids in private school. But I had the pleasure of meeting some of his friends a couple of weeks ago. And these 16, 17-year-old boys, you know, when they met me, they looked me in the eye, shook my hand. It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Fisher, blah, blah, blah. I had to clutch my pearls because, so, you know, and I know my sister. She doesn't take any mess. Dr. Adams, do we need more parents who don't take any mess? You know, programs notwithstanding? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I think we do. But unfortunately, there are parents who need parents. and you mentioned, you know, the incidents that, you know, parents being told about issues with their kids in school, and then they want to actually fight the teacher. So we have some parents that are not responsible people. How do you fill in that gap? How do you... I've known kids who've come from that environment but still have turned out to be decent human beings because they had someone in their lives who actually touched them in a way to make them see life differently. And so that's why I talked about social programs. That's why, I think we can't downplay the importance of that, the importance of teachers and teachers looking at kids not as potential criminals, but as, you know, that each kid has a potential. We need more counselors in the schools to actually work with the kids, to identify problems early and actually come up with plans of actions of how to turn the kids' life around. You know, we put a lot of responsibilities on these people, but I think that's how we fill in the gap.
Yeah. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. James, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, James. What's on your mind? James, are you there? James, give me a call back when you can. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So I just get an inbox, and this is such a touchy subject. But, you know, again, this is this honest, dear black people conversation. And it comes from Lawrence. And he says, good evening, you know, Mr. Fisher, you know, what about the kid who was killed allegedly trying to steal a car in Northeast D.C. at 4 a.m. in the morning? Yes, I'm sorry the kid lost his life. But, hey, what was a 13-year-old doing at 4:30 in the morning, you know, trying to get in the car? Where are his parents? That's such a difficult issue to discuss, you know, Sam. But it is something that we've been hearing since that young child was shot in Brookland.
Yeah, that's true, and you know, that is one of the difficulties, and I guess one of the risks. I heard the doctor just saying, you know, that some of the parents need parenting. I think that's true. You know, everybody's not lucky enough to do this. I mean, everybody's not lucky enough to have, you know, parents that have the money and have the ability to do good things for them or to lead them in the right direction. And in some cases they do, and the kid just goes his own way. I respect that, but at the same time, for society's purposes, I think there's got to be some control out here, you know? I'm sorry that the child didn't have this, but I still don't want them carjacking me, you know what I'm saying, or carjacking you. I just think that when you're dealing with things in a certain manner, there ought to be some intense supervision for young people that are doing things like this. Why are they carjacking? Basically because the cars are so difficult now, they used to just be able to steal them, you know, with a screwdriver. I understand some of them you can steal with a USB cord now, but the point is, most of them you can't. So the way they get the car, they have to take it from somebody. It's my belief that they got these guns so they could carjack these cars, and as a result of them having the guns, that's why the homicide rate for juveniles is going up, because they solve every problem with a gun. That's why we've doubled the homicide rate for juveniles here in the city, you know. But at the same time, when somebody's found with these guns, I think there ought to be some serious consequence, whether you are a juvenile or an adult.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you talk about the situation with juveniles and guns, for example, as we saw a year ago in Montgomery County, where the student shot another student in the bathroom. And, you know, at first blush, you know, we've got a kid with a ghost gun in school. Okay. But then you've got a kid with a ghost gun in school because he was afraid of the kid that he shot. Okay. Not saying that either one of those situations were, you know, are right. But, you know, why is, you know, I mean, bullying's been going on since Cain and Abel. I get it. But, you know, why are... You know, why are you afraid of another student in high school? You know, what was said? What was the threat? What was the you know, the perceived, you know, threat? You know, the guns that were the kids that were arrested in Prince George's at the beginning of the school year last school year, because they had guns, you know, in school. For what? It's the rhetorical question, Dr. Adams.
Well, I think when you talk about the gun issue, you know, that's not just a black thing.
Right.
If you think about,
but we're talking about black people right now.
Sure.
You know, I mean, no, well, it's not. None of these issues are, you know, black folks don't have a monopoly on right. these issues across the country. Mm-hmm. But we're talking right. about black folks today.
Sure. Of course. Yeah, I accept that. I guess the point that I really wanted to make is that I think we really need to talk about seriously, how do we control this issue with guns? Not, of course, for the African-American community, but the community at large. If you look at, you know, the number of mass shootings have increased across this country for a number of years, and it just seems to get worse and worse every year. You know, that's an issue that impacts all of us. So, unfortunately, we haven't been able to move the needle on that. But in regards to what we can do in our communities, I think we need to, really pressure politicians about the buyback program. I think we need to, get serious about how to deal with the violence that we're seeing, but not in a way where we are further criminalizing our young children. I think the difficulty that I see where we talk about juvenile delinquents is that we know we all did stupid stuff as kids, but we were in different sets of circumstances. And I'm not saying that someone who commits murder is the same as someone who might have stolen something or done something else stupid as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But the same child that does something stupid at 16, regardless of what that is, could be a different person in their 20s if given the right kind of attention and effort put into them.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Lionel. Oops, guess we lost Lionel. Give me a call back if you want to, Lionel. I'd love to hear what you have to say. So, you know, let's talk about some possible solutions that, you know, that happen, that need to happen in our communities. You know, Sam, on this program, I've had this running debate whenever we've had activists who say they want to take back their communities and, they want to, you know, either defund the police or make changes in the way the police monitor or patrol their communities. And I always throw up this one argument. If you've got grandma seeing, you know, three, you know, young men or young boys, and they are, leaning on grandma's car, and she asks them to do it, and they call grandma out of her name and they threaten them. Who patrols them? Who corrects them?
Well, I don't know that if it's that bad. You know, I don't know that anybody corrects them. I mean, that's the thing. The one thing I wanted to kind of talk about briefly,
sure,
Harold, is the city is spending a lot of money on a group called Violence Interrupters.
Right.
And a lot of people really don't know what they do. And there is some question that I even had, but I actually had a chance to talk to one the other night who is doing things that struck me as really interesting. And he said in his neighborhood, where he is a violence interrupter, that when anybody moves in, he goes, I guess, like welcome wagon, and introduces himself to them. And he says he talks to the young people, gets to know what's going on. And one of the things he said he does is if he sees that they are, let's say, headed toward trouble,
mm-hmm.
he said he will go to the parents and say, look, tell me what he's doing so that I can try to stop him before the police get to him. So, you know, I thought that was an interesting thing. You know, if these violent interrupters are doing that sort of thing, that strikes me as something to happen. We probably need people to try to be in these neighborhoods, deal with young people, and try to keep them from being, you know, locked up. Try to get to them before that happens. And, of course, you got to, you know, but the problem is you got to have a lot of trust, you know, from parents. And he said he makes sure people know that he doesn't work for the police. He has nothing to do with the police. His job, he sees, is trying to prevent young people from doing things that will introduce them to the police. But anyway, I just thought that was very interesting because I think a lot of us, including me, wonder sometimes, what do these guys do, you know?
And, yeah. And I agree that their job is not black and white. It is nuanced and complex, just as the issues in those communities are. They are nuanced and they are complex. And, you know, people who cut up in a community, whether it's littering or committing crimes or anything in between, need to have someone that they respect who can offer them tough love or even gentle correction. And I think that is certainly, you know, even etiquette, you know, if those kinds of things can be given to, you know, our children as, you know, as instructions at the youngest of ages, please, thank you, and you're welcome consistently, it may very, very well make a difference in how they develop, you know, as they get older. I have so many stories, but Sam and Dr. Adams, I remember a couple of years ago, this was pre-COVID, I'm standing on my front porch in Baltimore, and there's a young man who's driving down the street and, you know, in his car, speeding. You know, my street, it's narrow. We're talking 20 miles an hour. That's as fast as you're supposed to go. And he parked, and he walked up, and I said, you know, young man, you know, you need to really slow down. There are some children in this neighborhood. There are pets. You don't want to hurt anyone, and you don't want to get hurt. And he spoke to me in some of, you know, the most colorful metaphors that I had heard from a person in a while.
How old was he?
Don't know, but he was a late teenager. But here's the thing. He was visiting a neighbor that I respect and love. And a couple of days later, I went by to see them because they invited me up, you know, to have a drink or two. And that young man was sitting in the kitchen, and you should have seen the look on his face.
Not bad.
You know, and so no more problems out of him. I didn't say anything. But, you know, I think the reality is I'm all here for, you know, self-correction because I'm old school, because my father corrected me and my mother still corrects me. And when I had dinner with my lovely 24-year-old daughter just last week, and she let a curse word slip, I love her to death, and I gave her the, no, we don't do that at 24. I don't do that in front of my mother. My mother's 80. But I think that, you know, those small things, we need to look in the mirror at ourselves. We can blame a whole lot of people. You know, Dr. Adams, we can talk about programs and, you know, and whatever else, but somebody, uncles, aunts, moms, dads, residents, sages of our street, because if we don't do something about the things that are happening in our community and kind of taking responsibility for things that are happening in our community, what's the saying? The chickens are going to come home to roost.
Yeah, sometimes though, I look at black communities in many different places. I look at black communities in West Africa, black communities in Brazil, I don't really see in many ways of black communities that are, let's say, to some degree as loose as ours. I mean, they just seem to be more united, I think, is a way to say it. As I've looked around, and sometimes I think, wow, maybe we don't pay attention. And of course, a lot of times, if you have some of the older people, they will talk about, well, before integration, this happened, that happened. I don't know D.C. before integration. I came from a little town in Kansas. But I know that, I had respect for old people, and everybody I knew did. I mean, it wasn't like I was unusual. So it's certainly a different atmosphere than, what I was used to. But, it's a different time.
James, calling from Riverdale. Thanks for calling, James. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to say that when we talk about responsibility, what are we going to take responsibility? I just think we have to incorporate the discussion about how our communities were deconstructed, redlining, how we don't own the narratives of our own schools, how our communities were just, I think one of the calls before was saying about segregation or desegregation, and those are important things that we have to incorporate into the discussion and layer that in when we talk about that personal responsibility.
Do we? Do we, James? In 2023?
I mean,
James, come on. Because,
James,
come on. You're going to blame them again? Because at some point when the teacher says, we want parents to come out and voice their opinions about what's coming on, what's happening in our school system. We need you to come to the council meeting. We need you to come to the school board meeting. We want your voice to be heard. You need to vote.
All those things we do. But to dismiss decades and decades of investment in undermining our communities, how is that right? I think both things have to happen at the same time.
I don't think it's right, and I'm well aware of the history. But what I'm saying now is being aware of that history and knowing what it did, what are we going to do now? How do we write our own history? How do we take charge of our own communities? And it's so funny, and I know these are completely different cities and completely different circumstances, but I got my feelings hurt. I was on vacation last week. I went out to Las Vegas. I'm not a gambler, but I got my feelings hurt watching the news, because for the 5 days that I was there, I didn't see one report of a murder or a carjacking. And I know that the black population in Las Vegas is different from the black population in the D.C. metro. I know it's smaller, but I will say one of the things about Las Vegas, first of all, everybody is working. Everybody's working. Everybody's doing something. And I saw, young black kids working. And I know, like I said, every city is different, completely different economics and dynamics out there, but everybody was working. And I'm just wondering, what's happening there that's not happening here? What can we duplicate in our communities there to cut back on the homicide rate? Dr. Adams, you said you were raised in Baltimore. I live in Baltimore. It's a reflection of what's going on in D.C. We've got black people there, black people here. What can we do, Dr. Adams? What can we do as individuals, as a community, to fix our problem?
Well, I think you kind of inadvertently talked about a solution.
Go ahead.
If everybody's working, if everybody feels like they have a sense of purpose,
mm-hmm.
That moves people in the right direction. And you're not going to reach everyone. That's just, unfortunately, a fact.
Right.
But if we can try to reach most, and we've been here before, so this conversation I'm sure I had like 10 years ago. So, these kinds of things happen in cycles, and we have to remember that although we're going through this now, that this too shall pass,
but we need to figure out how we don't end up back here and how we get out of where we are right now. And I think some of the things that we talked about this evening can move us in the right direction. I also think that there are agencies that need to put money into funding the best solutions. So looking at what has worked and kind of mirroring those programs across the country, I think, is what we need to do. I could say more, but I'll let the other guests now.
Well, I'll have to let that be, you know, the last word. But I did want to say, you know, James, keep fighting that fight, though. Keep fighting the fight. Remember, you know, yeah, remember our history. But, you know, when we are in our communities, you know, I think that we have an opportunity to take control of what's happening in our communities. I don't know how. Mm-hmm. I don't have the answer. But I think, you know, that first step is to make a decision that you are going to do it. Dr. Terry Adams, thank you again for sharing in this program. Sam Ford, always good to have you on the program, man. Keep doing your stuff. I'm watching you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, February 28th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.